about focus issues in the CI, we are happy about that because the focus on CI is about that. And in the work that we are just raising this money, what we need to do is to continue to be on the policy. We have gone ahead to start fundraising endowments by purifying the space, by ensuring that we separate the protection in service from crime intelligence. So crime intelligence is now a standalone function under the leadership of Dr. Zulu. We have gone ahead to deal with the vacancies that were there, both at national as well as in the provinces. We have dealt with the issues of the finances and accounting that was there, and this is why even in the COVID areas, we managed to get an unqualified financial audit. So I just want to say we are very grateful for the hard work that continues in that space, the energy that is being put towards the turnaround strategy that we are having, the strategy repositioning that is taking place in that environment, the number of projects that we see them running. We're very grateful for that. We are also capacitating the provinces. We started buying them cars, looking into their offices, and we are indeed making progress in that space. In terms of the report that we're bringing for you, Chair, and your honorable members, indeed, in the three performance areas that they're responsible for, they've managed to achieve all of them. And on that note, Chairperson, I shall then request that General Sheta first deals with the finances of this environment, and then Dr. Zulu will continue to deal with the performance of the predetermined objectives. General Sheta.
Thank you, General. Thank you, Chairperson. This environment, as we've said in the past as well, consists of two sub-programs, the one being crime intelligence operations, and the other one being intelligence and information management. Crime intelligence operations under extended summit to the percentage of 96.9. Intelligence and information management expended 102.5, and the program in total was 100.2%. As we said, it's nearly 90% personnel intensive. And then also the other expenditure item is of equipment and operational expenses, including fuel, oil, vehicles, maintenance of the fleet, and then also telecommunication if you go to your goods and services environment. That, in essence, is the two sub-programs who address security intelligence, counterintelligence, surveillance, technical support, and a host of other specific activities. Thank you, Chairperson.
I shall now ask Dr. Zulu to deal with the predetermined objectives as well as their highlights of crime intelligence operations.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Chairperson, and the members of the Parliament. I'll be looking to the program four, which is crime intelligence. In terms of program four, crime intelligence, we've got two sub-programs that we look on. That is the crime intelligence operations, where we focus on the operations which are intelligence-led, as well as the second sub-program, which is the intelligence and information that we manage during our execution of our job. And when I go to the sub-program number one, which is crime intelligence operations, in 2013-2014, we were able to achieve 34,534 number of network operations that we're able to conduct it. Out of the 29,552 that we've planned. So in that way, we're able to achieve more than the target that we've set, which was 490, which we exceeded by 4,982. And then that was on the operation, which looks on the network. And the sub-program number two, which is the intelligence and information management, where we deal with mostly our different types of reports, the profile, the communication analysis, the crime threat assessment. That is where we look in the intelligence and information management. There we plan to conduct, to produce intelligence products, which will, is expected to, in 2013, 2014, to produce 256 reports. And then in the actual achievement that was done in this financial year, it became, if you look at it, it became 309 and 165 operational analysis reports. And then if you look at these reports, there are different reports that are being, intelligence products that are being generated in this program. We've got the profiles, where these profiles usually they are utilized either by the detectives, by the visible policing, whoever in the police who wants a certain profile for particular policing area. And then the second part is the intelligence analysis report, where we need to analyze some information so that we can give our intelligence perspective in order for the operational unit to operationalize that information. And then the fourth part is where we've got our communication analysis, where most of the time we find that the crime that has been committed, part of its communication was utilized. So we utilize, we assist with the scheme in terms of analyzing the communication and produce the report, which will assist the detectives as well as the visible policing in order to be able to continue their job. And then we also have the communication interception analysis reports, which we also do also in terms of investigation, and also these are mostly court-directed interceptions that we're doing so that we can assist the detectives as well as the DPCI to be able to deal with their cases. And in terms of communication analysis and in terms of the interception and cluster crime threat analysis, we are able to produce all together, it was 258,606, and we exceeded our target with 50,000. In fact, we exceeded our target with 50,559. In fact, the other side, we are saying that we achieved all in all 309 and 165. That is all in all. If you put your profile, your intelligence analysis report, your communication analysis, your interception, and your CTAs, all in all, they came to 309,000. And then the other part that we do in terms of program two, which is intelligence and information management, is to provide the quarterly intelligence report. And then those intelligence reports that we provide it to our management, subs management. We've managed to produce exactly the four intelligence reports, which usually we utilize the report to guide the organization and to guide also the policing to say which direction should we go to address crime. And then the most highlights that we had in terms of the 2013-2014, the National Commissioner Chairperson already alluded to some of these issues in terms of the separation of SIPs, which was the structure, which was joining crime intelligence and the protection service. Now we are separated. Previously, when we came, it was SIPs, but now we've got crime intelligence reporting on its program and protection services reporting on its program. And then we had also made a great progress in terms of the rating of the senior management, the lieutenant generals, That was also a question that we need to finalize. We made a great progress on that one. We've got an approved crime intelligence turnaround strategy that we are utilizing, which we are seeing a bit now yielding some results. And we've achieved about annual plan targets. We've planned that we'll achieve about what we plan to do, which I can say, we say it's a mega highlight in terms of our work that we are doing. And part of, if you look our strategic plan of 2010 to 2014, it was talking about capacitation of crime intelligence, which was a challenge. So in terms of addressing that particular priority, we've appointed the leadership at different levels. At a provincial level, we had six provincial heads that were appointed, and then we've got also the component, two component heads that were appointed. Previously, in the provincial office, we only had one permanent provincial head, which was an instant Cape. And then currently, we've got now seven permanent provincial heads, only two provinces that they are still having the acting provincial head, which the other one is in the process of being finalized, and the other one is just because there was a dispute in terms of the person that we could not advertise the post because the person who occupied the post is still, the process is still in the dispute. And then in the component heads, we didn't have any permanent component heads there in crime intelligence. We had brigadiers who were just acting. Now we've got two major generals now who are permanently working at CI as the component heads, which is the counter and security, as well as on the COVID collection side. So, and then in terms of the vetting, part of the, if you look on our strategic plan of 2010-2014, it talks about the issue of capacitating the vetting officers. So we were able to, employ 88 vetting officers who are now starting to help us to deal with the backlog, which has been a problem to CI. And then this financial, previous financial year, we were able to advertise 244 posts, which are talked again to the capacitation of crime intelligence. We were able to advertise 244 posts from different level 5 to 12, and all those posts that were advertised we filled. And those are the highlights, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Members, we will now go to questions. As you recognize, there was just two questions from my side. The first question is related to the turnaround strategy. Of course, we as the portfolio committee welcome the turnaround strategy and all steps related to ensuring that environment is cleaned up and the necessary expertise is there. Just regarding the leadership, Dr. Zulu is still in an acting position. The International Commissioner can just maybe indicate in terms of are we going to stabilize that situation. And then secondly, there was made mention yesterday as well, in terms of recruitment, the new kind of profile of a person that we need for this environment in terms of well-qualified, degree young people. I just want to know, in terms of that program, are we making progress in terms of attracting the right caliber of candidate to ensure that we have the necessary people to deal with in a new environment in terms of intelligence? Honorable Kale Barnard, Honorable Wolabatsi, Honorable Groenewald, other members who want to just indicate.
Thank you, Chair. Could you just fill us in on the status of Richard and Bluey? Does it look like he's going to be with us till the end of his term? What is the situation with him? Can we not get rid of this man in any way, shape, or form? Secondly, and that I think speaks also to something the chairperson just asked, what is the status of the second suspended head of crime intelligence, Kristen Gorbel? Now, he was suspended. The claims were there were discrepancies regarding his matric certificate. That was after he issued the instruction to open up the case against the Commissioner, the National Police Commissioner, and the Western Cape Police Commissioner. Now, it's been reported he was, in fact, part of a special dispensation from MK, or former Homelands, who were allowed into the SAS without a matric. Is that correct? Is it not correct? Is he also sitting at home on R1 million a year? I suppose he really earns a lot more than that, but I'm not sure. What is the situation? If he's back, where is he? And this position of provincial crime intelligence heads. Now, the chairperson has just alluded to, are we pulling in people with their degrees and high caliber people? However, the advertisement that went out for the position of provincial heads of crime intelligence was downgraded from having to have a diploma or a degree to simply having to have a matric certificate. That's from R1 million a year post. That was contrary to National Instruction 4/2010 that states that candidates should at least have an NQF level 6 qualification. Now, really, a matric certificate for R1 million a year post. I'd like an explanation for why this position was downgraded to this extent. I just don't think for R1 million a year post a matric certificate is sufficient. And I want to know why it was done, because what it speaks of in people's minds is that it was downgraded so that certain people who were not qualified could then be parachuted in. That is what that says. Please answer those. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. During the 2012-2013 budget hearings, the PC on police stated the lack of measurable targets. What is the situation now? As a concern, what is the situation now? The second question is on the division has had some turbulence. To what extent did this turbulence impact on the morale and the service delivery? My third question is, you have a vacancy rate of 2.2%. How do you plan to rectify this? My fourth one, the vacancies that you speak of, that you say were filled so far, was everybody vetted? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my first question also relates to the Honourable Morabati's question. I'd like to receive an explanation. How do you determine the target? How do you determine that? It's actually the same thing, but I'd like to know what steps do you take, how do you take it, or is it a covert question I'm asking, but at least let me get the answer on that one. Secondly, Chairperson, I'd like to ask on the vetting of subs. Now, I don't know whether you're going to have it separately. Okay, separately. Then I will keep it to them. Then the other thing I want to ask, the communication interceptions. Can we as a committee today get the assurance that all communication interceptions taken by crime intelligence is legal, and that the pre-permission to obtain that has been acquired? I will start with those questions. Thank you.
If you can just introduce yourself and welcome to the Police Portfolio Committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Lungi Mganga Gabashi. On the crime intelligence operations, your actuals by end of the financial year 2014 were sitting at 96.9%. I would like to know what is the plan for you to increase that number. It's not that bad, but if you take that into rents and cents, into funds that are put, Treasury will say the acceptable norm is 100%, but at least the acceptable norm, if you don't reach 100%, is 98%. So what is the plan for you for the next financial year to increase that to 100% or at least to 98%? Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will first get responses from
Thank you, Chairperson. The issue of the turnaround strategy, as indicated as a highlight, and the issues that I mentioned indeed is yielding. The reports that you've seen as the targets that are achieved and what we've exceeded shows that there's much, much more work going into the 7.10 in terms of that. We're looking at staffing issues, we're looking at financial management issues, we're looking at purification issues, we're looking at focus in terms of our outputs and all those type of issues. So I would like to say we would like to believe that the turnaround strategy is really starting to yield what it's supposed to yield. And some of the successes that we're starting to see, whether it's with the mall, you know, crimes that we're experiencing, of course we're having a very good intelligence system that is working. So indeed, I think Jefferson would like to say the turnaround is doing what it's supposed to be doing, and we're starting to see bright lights at the end of the tunnel. The leadership position that you are talking about in terms of Major General Zulu, yes, he is acting. It is linked to the question that has already been asked by Honorable Barnett. She's acting because there had been a lot of pending issues around Lieutenant General Mulule. We know that there has been some court outcomes. A lot of what we hadn't been able to do was dependent on a number of those outcomes. In terms of our internal processes, there were charges that were postponed senior year. We are now back in terms of those processing, internal processes, and we shall be pursuing those. In terms of whether we are attracting the right caliber, and I shall again link it with some, but I'll come to those issues that were raised by Honorable Barnett. In all our recruitment, Jefferson, we try very hard to ensure that we get people with the qualities that would assist us to achieve the objectives of SAR. It is our duty and our responsibility as leaders to ensure that we do so. And as we do so, we look at issues of experience, ability, qualifications, competence, prior learning, all those things are taken into account. And the Act also allows the National Commissioner to, where there's a need to condone certain things, to condone that in order to ensure that you can attract the right people. So at any given time, we take all those issues into account, and we can assure this committee that those that we appoint into positions are people who are there to ensure that we achieve the objectives of the organization, and they have the ability, the experience, the competence, the prior learning that will assist them to do so. Honorable Barnett, you also alluded to the issue of Lieutenant General Mulule. Indeed, as I've indicated, our internal processes were postponed synergy, and we shall continue with those internal processes that have been postponed. On the matter of Chris Mwobo is undergoing a disciplinary hearing. He has already said on several occasions, and the reason he is in that hearing, it is not because he doesn't have a matric certificate, because there are many members in some who, due to the arrangement that you referred to, who, due to the integration of policing, that do not have matric certificates, but they have declared as such, and they have been appointed on the basis of that. But if you apply for a job and you misrepresent your qualification, it is criminal. So it is for the basis of those issues that we're dealing with this matter of misrepresentation of qualification. And that matter came to our attention through a process of vetting where the member was denied clearance because of integrity issues of declaring the qualification. We then had to do further investigations and follow up on the matter, and this is why we had charges. It is not because the member doesn't have a trick. In terms of the NSF processes, indeed, and the integration processes, indeed, we had police that were from municipalities, police that came from the NSF environment, police that came from the other homelands, that did not have metric, and that did not stop the police service to recognize those members, and we continue to do so. We develop them, we give them opportunities to develop themselves because they have experience and they've been there, they are accommodated in the police service. So I wish for this house to know that it wasn't for not having a matric certificate, it was for misrepresentation that this member is now in a disciplinary hearing. The issue of whether we matric or we withdrew a position and whatever, I have said that at any given time, as a national commissioner, I make sure that our net is cast wide to ensure that we attract the right people to assist us to do our job. So the withdrawal was meant to ensure that the basket can assist us to attract the right people. When you advertise a position and you realize that you haven't attracted sufficient, it is incumbent on you, the accounting officer, to ensure that you cast your net wide to assist you to attract the right people. And I'm confident, Chairperson, that we're attracting the right people and we're appointing the right people. Honorable members, you've asked issues around measurable targets. Currently, we reported on 3 targets, and I'm sure Menzio will increase those targets for next year. Yes, in our APP, we're trying to increase the targets so that there can be more transparent understanding of the work that we're doing on crime intelligence, particularly above the line. You would recall that a lot of the other targets are not being reported here. They're being reported into another committee. So what you see here are those that are relating to our above the line crime intelligence work. But even in this case, we've increased the targets. Even in the COVID for the report that we gave to the JSCI, we've again increased the targets because we believe it's a very important area. We should be able to shed more light to say what else are we doing that we should be accounting on that oversight agencies and such as yourself could be able to get comfort in terms of the work that we are doing. The issue of morale, we've gone a long way in terms of the turnaround service. I had the opportunity of meeting with the executive teams in the strategic sessions, some of the roadshows that we've done in the provinces. I would want to say to yourselves, as the oversight committee, to say we're back on track. And a lot of good work is happening, and I see motivated members, I see better outputs, and that talks to the fact that the turnaround is actually yielding. vacancy rate, you would have noted that we've reported a number of positions that have been filled. As we talk right now, there are many other positions that have been advertised, we'll be reviewing, we'll be interviewing to make sure that we fill those positions and we're able to support at a local and a cluster level the necessary intelligence that is required to assist us to achieve our goals. On issues of vetting, indeed, we have recapacitated this area. I had the opportunity of attending the workshop of the entire 88 and other members in this vetting decision in Harman's Cross just some 2-3 months ago. And if I look at the progress that we've made, both in training and the skills that we're having, and the progress we're making, which we would be, I think there's something that has been postponed where we were coming to share with the committee the progress we've made in terms of our vetting. And we do hope that at some point we would also be able to share just what we've done in terms of vetting, how we're progressing, what areas we're better prioritizing. We started with the SMS, we started prioritizing some areas such as the SCM and others. So there's a lot of work that is going into that area to ensure that we cover the relevant ground in terms of vetting. You also asked, what we do to assess members that we appoint. All the members that would have been appointed in these leadership positions, they are part of the SMS. One, they would have been vetted. We've also introduced new other systems, you know, that we use to pre-assess people through the technology management services. We have systems such as GECs where we pre-assess people. We use our clean records to pre-assess people. GECs will tell us a lot of things. It will tell us what cars you've ever owned in your life. It is linked. It links to a number of agents. It will tell us what farms you own. It will tell us what criminality you have. It will tell us a lot of things, what education you have without access. So we connect to a lot of engines that will be able to give us a profile of a person at a glance. So we've introduced all those things after realizing some of the challenges that we're having. So before we even say to a person, come and work and we go to your referees, we do our own work as such to try and understand who are we appointing. So a lot of work goes into pre-vetting, pre-assessing people when they come into SAPS. We have put a lot of energy and a lot of support in that place, given the fact that we want to also get out of, say, some of the historic processes that have not been very, very, very intense in terms of vetting the people that are coming into our space. The Honorable Brunner, the issue of target determination. In terms of government requirement, they always say for each objective, you know, each objective has got to be SMART. It must be a clear objective that shows that the outcome A is achievable. Two, it must be measurable. So part of what we are doing is through the APP process, a lot of iterations that we go through to say if this is the objective that you say you're setting, what are the targets that you need to set? You know, first, how are you going to know that you're achieving that target, and thirdly, to what quantum? So we really go through a very rigorous process in each of the areas to set those targets. And what you see, there are much more sub-targets and mini targets that are linked to the work, but for purposes of reporting and accounting and APT presentation, you know, we choose the key ones that are here. So we do go do a lot of work in terms of that. The issue of intersections, I've actually also looked at a revision of that environment so that we can increase our compliance in terms of the Act 70 that actually regulates this environment. The authority for approving Section 70 intersection sits with me. The intelligence would come with the, you know, with building a lot of gates and hurdles to ensure that we can make sure that what we are applying for is what we need to investigate. So that process, on a weekly basis, we sit with the intelligence people, those that do the administration, the head of intelligence, and myself, to ensure that by the time the documents go to the judge, we've all gone through them, and we have checked and cross-checked them, even with the suppliers that are supposed to confirm those numbers for us. So that process has been very tightened. If there is anything prior to our coming in and the tightening of the process, it could be there, but right now I can assure this committee that the application for interception is very, very organized, and we've gotten good feedback also from the judge who's handling that, because she's now very satisfied with the processes that were followed. Thank you, Jim.
We'll go to another round. Yes, I recognize those two members. So just, maybe just from my side, two questions. The one is on page 192 of the annual report, in the column, strategic objective to supply MECOC climate intelligence relating to national strategic installations, percentage of strategic intelligence report generated per request. Now, in terms of last year's annual report, on page 143, there was an indication of 18 reports. Now it's indicated as classified. If we can just get maybe the reason for that, in terms of the reason for that. And then in terms of the targets, the philosophy in terms of achieving the targets, but then to link it to crime and fuel crime. If we argue that part of the focus is to ensure that we deal with fuel crime and serious crime, of course that means that there would be more involvement of this program to ensure that we reduce those figures or statistics. Now the question is, in terms of the latest statistics that we still have to receive, there is an increase in fuel crime. Now if you say on the one hand that you are satisfied with your targets, you've achieved all your targets, even the targets below in terms of what should be the outcome. I just want to maybe from a management point of view get that view. Honourable Colabana.
Thank you, Chair. Please, Commissioner, I was interested you should refer to the mall robbery as a plus. I lost count. I think did we end up with 15 in counting or somewhere like that? A gang stole into the pavilion just outside Durban a few days ago, emptied an entire jewellery store. I don't see how that relates to crime intelligence working. I cannot see how that's being used here. I was gobsmacked to hear you say that. And I also would like to know, let's speak again about Richard and Bluey. Why did you choose to postpone the internal processes, that disciplinary hearing against Richard and Bluey? Now, I've watched another process being played out with Major General Boyson, head of the Hawks and KZN, cleared twice by the Labour Court, once by the High Court, once by a disciplinary hearing, and which instructed that he should be put back, and yet you suspended him again. Now, for Richard and Bluey, you decided he should not face a disciplinary hearing, and the previous minister did everything he could to keep Richard and Bluey in the SAPs, but finally public pressure just ensured that he had to suspend the man. Now, why the double standards? Because that's what it looks like to me. Why did you have to be instructed by a court of law to take Richard and Bluey to a disciplinary within the SAT? And what has happened to the SAT's member who was instructed to and drew up the report revealing Richard and Julie's looting of the slush fund, the crime intelligence slush fund? What has happened to him? Because I'm hearing really bad things there. Thank you.
Honourable Kobo, then Mr. Groenewald, and then Honourable Mulabati, and then Honourable wrong information, sorry.
Thank
Deputy Chairperson, there seems to be a discrepancy on the figures, the program that I referred to earlier on in relation to the plan to increase the output or the spending. On the annual report, page 194, the actuals are correct, but the final appropriation, the figures, doesn't talk to what you presented here as an adjusted estimate on the slide. It's, yes, it's still 1.1 billion, but in terms of the thousands, the figures are not correct. If you go to the not even the thousands, the millions, the figures are correct. If you could just clarify that for me. If Peter could just be specific, Chairperson. The annual report talks about it's 1 billion 121 million and in your slide, but in the annual report, which you termed as adjusted estimates, it talk about 1,157,000,000 instead of 121. Am I clear, Chairperson? Not unless there is another copy of a report, maybe the report, the copies that we're talking about that was not circulated in time. Let me repeat it. On your slide, it says 1.57 in your slide. 1.157,600. You add those zeros, which is becomes a billion. But on the annual report, it's in a column that says final appropriation under crime intelligence, which is a program expenditure. It says 1.121,807 and then the zeros for the billion. I think it's clear now. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for that, Honorable Groenewald, then Honorable Bonaparte, then Honorable Twala.
Thank you, Chairperson. Further on the Ndudi saga, can we get a final cleanup report from the Commissioner, Chairperson, as far as the allegations of appointment of family members, vehicles, is everything completed on investigation, what steps have been taken, can we have a cleanup on that? My second question, Chairperson, is can I just get the procedure again for the payment of informants when it comes to crime intelligence? Thank you.
Honorable Mulabasi.
Thank you, Chair. In the past, there were two marked vehicles involved in wrongdoings in Gauteng, both of them. What are the findings so far? My second question is on, do you have a strategy in place to ensure that these officers who were vetted stay clean? Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Twala, welcome.
Thank you, Chair. Commissioner, probably General Zulu would be the most relevant to respond to this one. There's a private sector interception capability. To what extent has the unit gone in trying to curtail that? The interception capability located within the private sector. To what extent are you able to curtail that? Would it talk to
the kind of capacity that you alluded to as having been checked up within the unit. I'm directing this primarily on the Section 70 issue as raised by the Commissioner. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I just add on the question of the informants? Can we, is it possible to get an amount paid out to the informants for the financial year? Thank you.
Other on Parker?
Chairman, my apologies for joining you later. I was actually coming from another engagement. My question actually is around the issues that have actually been reported regarding the provincial commissioner of KwaZulu-Natal. In that serious allegations actually have been reported about a alleged corrupt relationship with a certain businessman who it is alleged paid for her husband's birthday, who is also a member of SAP. I would like to know if there is any investigation being done around that matter. If so, how far is the investigation now? If not, why not? Thank you.
Thank you for that. Commissioner, you're here.
Thank you very much. The issue of funds, I think it was also a question that we didn't ask in the answer in the last round. I'm asking General Skeeter to attend to all those funds issues.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, item 5.9 of the notes, page 309 of the annual report relates to the informal fees. The chairperson also referred to it yesterday, if I'm not mistaken. It was 33.4 million in 12-13, and in 13-14 it was 30.3 million. Page 309, your disclosure note 5.9, you will see there's informal fees. Okay. Then just to respond to the question of the Honourable Member. Honourable Member, what you see on the slide is the adjusted estimates before any shift of virement in order to indicate to the committee the variance. What is in the report that you would find in the financial statements. In the appropriation statement. That what you will find on page 194, while, and you're basically asking why is final appropriation and actual expenditure the same? That was after those variances have been made good by means of either virement or shift. That's but so it's a different. The one is before any adjustment and the one is after the adjustment. And that is why it is so. But this is to indicate to members to say this was before we did anything there. Thank you. Just a response in terms of that one sub program that was somewhat under at 97%, 96.9% under. It was mainly goods and services and a bit of capital as well. Now the plans we have always for capital is to try and order as quickly as possible because it's mostly vehicles in that regard. There might be other equipment, but it's mostly vehicles and to push the suppliers in terms of delivery schedules. In terms of the goods and services, it is just to increase our monitoring in this regard and also pressure in terms of delivery and early detection. Or earlier detection, shall I say? Thank you.
Chairperson, I'm asking them to look at the targets that you referred to. Maybe if you could just again repeat that page so that they can go back to it.
In terms of the previous year, it was page 143
for the previous year. Okay. Let me, in the meantime, Chairperson, move on to the other issues that have been raised by Honorable Paula Banerjee. The postponement of the Mzuli disciplinary. First, let me say, when I got into the office, those disciplinary processes were already in place. In my very first month, the chairperson of the hearing postponed the hearing for the case, non-subs. The chairperson of the hearing postponed the hearing synergy, and then all those dependencies, of course, and other things took place. We are not instructed to continue. The charges have been there. The internal process is meant to continue, so it is not an instruction of the court. The court is just there, again, re-emphasizing the need to do it. So it's not that we're going to reinstitute on the basis of that. See, the year was without any date, so the internal processes have already reported yet, will be continued with. I do not, I'm not able to deal with the issues where you are saying there is some bit of inconsistency, because I think all those matters are receiving the attention that they need to receive them freely. Process, the poison process, all of them are receiving the attention that they need to receive from us in terms of internal process. Honorable Hunewald, on the issue of the employee allegations, I don't know if what I have read given as an answer partly answers your issues, but the other issues around the appointment of people, they would be part of the hearing, of course, and the allegations, but also that remember that it wasn't only General Zui who was involved in this, we had General Lazarus. His hearing has been done, it has been concluded, and he's been found guilty on some counts, and he's out of the subsystem. So those matters have been dealt with.
Sorry, Chair, I'm breaching the protocol through you, Chair. Specifically, where the Lazarus issue, you said, has been dealt with, just for information. But the other issue where family members of some of the people were appointed, where luxury cars were purchased and everything, is that also completed? I see there's two separate issues then.
And the hearings and the disciplinary was based precisely as a result of the finding of those reports, because we did the investigation on the basis of those investigations. The charges were made, the hearings took place, and this is why the outcome of General Lazarus talks to the reports and the investigations that we had done in the terrorism. The issues of how much you pay informants, those are the reports that are sitting in the financials of the JSCI committee chairperson. We are not at liberty because of the laws of how we report to parliament to deal with those aspects here.
No, I presume the 30 million is regarding the station informer fee. In terms of the
vote, since the session. Yes, the Secretary is on the vote, on our vote. The others that the National Commission are referring to is in the secret service account. Those are totally different. These are mainly to a large extent also being used by detectives.
On the issue of that vehicle, may I request your attention, because this is what we will deal with in the fiscal policing area. We would be talking to some of those issues we can deal with, what we did to deal with those marked cars when we present the baseball program. There was a question around keeping vetted people clean. I think it's a dual process here, Honorable Legal Secretary. One, once we vetted them, if there is anything that come up through the systems that we're having, the GECS program or other systems, we require our members to detail. Once you're vetted, if I find myself in a situation where I have to appear in court for any criminal, whatever, the protocols of subs in terms of their prisons require that you notify the employer that I have this type of situation, and the employer can know what to do. Non-compliance we treat very seriously. That's part of the processes that we're starting to actually, you know, ensure that we activate and we live up to those prisons that have been there and have not been complied with. So we're driving a lot of compliance in terms of those areas. On the 29th of May, in 2013, I issued another instruction reminding the members that if you are having any matters in court that we need to know of, please declare. And when you apply for any position, we also require that you declare, because it's a very different thing if you say, I had a traffic fine in 2009 for which I paid a fine. It shows your sense of your integrity. Rather than us going through gaps and discovering that you had that and you had a fine. So we encourage, we actually in our application require that people declare, and that does influence our decision making in terms of whether we promote, appoint, transfer, or do those type of issues. So those are some of the tools that we use, but the greatest tool is the integrity of the member. They have the duty and responsibility to make us aware of issues like that.
Honorable Mulabachi, you want to come in there? Follow up.
The National Commissioner speaks of people declaring. What if they don't declare? You only find out that the day you promote him. And that hence I'm talking of a strategy.
The strategy we have now would be punitive, but remember, it's a lot of responsibility from the members, because if we find out, you are forcing us to actually do something else. But if you take responsibility, it becomes a very mutual process where we can do other things. And part of what we are also doing, as you would recall when I presented the structure to this committee, that we have established an integrity unit. The integrity unit is also going to help us really to track some of these issues, but that is when the employer does something. But I'm saying it's a mutual process. The employee must know that there is a demand for integrity. And for that integrity to take place, it takes the employer and the employee. And if the employee is not doing it, now we just resort to a punitive measure. So I think the integrity unit will be addressing a number of the issues. That is why we've established it. Because it's a large service. It's a service that requires that we use most of our clean hands to police. And to maintain, to grow that, it's taking quite a lot of, it's putting a lot of demands on us as a service. So that unit will be assisting us a lot, benchmarking it against a number of units that have already been established in the public service to ensure that it can assist us to do our work. the issue of private sector intervention, I'm sure Dr. Zulu will talk to that, but I think I just want to commend his focus. This is an area that, in our opinion, is highly unregulated, particularly when you start looking at the CIRA environment, the private security environment. What gadgets are being brought into the country? What gadgets are being bought? We are of the opinion that there are gaps in that space. So, and it is not an environment that we have a remit upon. What we can do is to ensure that vetting and interception that is formal and legitimate is put through the processes that we're putting through. But ordinarily, that space, Honorable Member, is an area that we are also concerned about. And we believe that if we are to advance in that space somewhere in the country, there may be a need to look at it more legislatively and legally. The last one, Chair, on this round was the issue raised by Honorable Poku around the PC of KZN. My response to this one is that these matters, I think, were even taken to the NPA. We received a letter from the DPP indicating that they have nothing to prosecute this member on those issues. The letter is on our records and on our files. I will ask Menziwa, Chairperson, General Menziwa, to deal with the issues that you raised in terms of those targets. General Menziwa.
Chair, good morning. Honourable members. The two indicators are not the same, Chairperson. The one in Prison 43 was mainly referring to the exposition of the crime staff. And this one is more about the what is sitting in the strategic intelligence reports that are submitted to NICOG by intelligence in terms of the national intelligence estimate. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. A follow-up on the interagency unit. I hear the Commissioner is talking about the setup of that interagency unit. But maybe we can do more than that, because your integrity unit will be linked with HR. But there is another arm, your unit, that should get into this, is your internal audit, internal one. Because your internal audit will audit these matters on a quarterly basis, and you are able to monitor and how are you improving on the issues of the declaration. I thank you, Chair.
I think if there's no other questions outstanding, you just go through with that. For example, the one that I've asked regarding the targets. Isn't the targets below? And I mean, what is the impact? If we say we are addressing the question of true crime, what is the impact of that? We'll go to the other members as well. Honourable Kolobana, and then we'll get those responses. Honourable Honourable Groenewald.
Yeah, I wondered if this wouldn't fall under crime intelligence. When we met yesterday, we heard from the detectives that 15,000 warrants of arrest a month were issued by courts because detainees took bail and then disappeared. So actually much of detectives' work is actually redoing the work they did in the first place, trying to catch the same people that they'd already caught who were then let out on bail and then disappeared. And he said that there were 500,000 wanted persons out there. He said they'd got it down to 180,000, but it's an enormous amount, an enormous amount of work by the detectives. I did speak to to a person in justice, and you said it's an ongoing problem, very difficult to manage. Most of them are small fry in syndicates and related operations. The bail is paid by the syndicate, and they relocate to another city to continue committing crime working for the syndicate, and the syndicate prefers to lose the bail money rather than have that, take the chance that that member might shop them in court, and it's a method of buying loyalty, a demonstration if you caught the top brass will be there for you. Now, is there some sort of program within crime intelligence where they surely would be in a position to infiltrate the syndicates, find out who's doing this, assist or work with justice in this, in, I mean, 180,000 people have been arrested and promptly just run for the hills. Is there something in crime intelligence that's addressing this issue, that is assisting the detectives who now have to do the work all over again, because it's not a case of catching the small fry, it's a case of catching the people who are paying the bail. It should be easy enough to find. But surely that's a crime intelligence issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I please ask the Commissioner just to elaborate with some examples what she meant and was referring to around the concerns of gaps in the private security industry. And I seem to recall also Honourable Twyla's question referred to private interception in the private sector, because she gave the examples of concerns around as they said, guns coming in, but of course we have firearm control framework there. So what are the sort of tangible examples of issues where there's a legislative gap that is causing that concern? Just for the sake of, you know, if it's something this committee would need to look at some points, we certainly then need to assist in that way. Thank you.
Honourable Groenewald. Thank you, Chairperson. I can't think that I missed it. I'm actually becoming stronger in the afternoon and even in the evening, but I've asked specifically the procedure for the payment of an informant. When do we pay? How do you determine the amount? That is very important for me, because if there is one place where corruption can take place, it is with the informants. So that is very important to me to know exact the procedure when it comes to that. The other question, Chairperson, I just want to make sure about the interceptions. Do we have the right figure of 4541 interceptions approved by the judge? Because a recent report of the JSCI stated that there were only 460 approved interceptions from the judge, and that includes crime intelligence as well as the NIA environment. Are we sure about that figure?
Right, two questions from my side as well. I just want to know, in terms of the integrity testing that the National Commission referred to, we know there is a unit within DPCI that's dealing with the integrity testing, so is there a separate unit for CI in terms of integrity testing? And is there any complaints currently with Inspector General for the past financial year against any member of CI? If we can just get also clarity on that. Over to the Commission and the panel.
Chairperson, thank you very much. On the issues that were raised by Honourable Konabala, I just want to say, indeed what you're talking about is secular arrest, which means police who continue to arrest and arrest and arrest. I think it's very important to look at the role of the intertwined nature of the courts. I find it difficult to process
some of the issues, because you know, I'll give an example. You arrest a member that was somebody who was involved in your heist. You find that person with part of the money, 3 million or 3.5 million of the loot. You take that person to a court, and that person is given a 500 rand bail. There's very little that the police can do. We can raise our issues and our concerns, and we'll go into secular arrest. So the issues that we're raising are very difficult for us as the police. Arrest Vishal. But we're also saying some of the resources of this secular arrest are problematic in a sense that we should be arresting other criminals because those we have arrested. And you also find that some of these people who are finding bails are having a list of bails. So already if you have actually, you know, you're on bail 15, a magistrate or a court should be thinking differently. And those are some of the things where we can't, you know, describe as police. Our job is to arrest. But it's an issue that we will continue to discuss in the JCPS lesson. And there is also the National Efficiency and Effectiveness Forum, where the Chief Justice is bringing us all together to discuss on how we can improve the value chain. So we will take some of those issues there. The issue of interception, the question is, we do not have control. Who can buy those gadgets? Control on who buys, who sells those gadgets. And this is where the gap lies in to say, is there something that can be done to ensure that some of these issues can be dealt with? I mean, it's the same as if you look at drugs, the production of these tablets, the machinery that is in the pharmaceutical to produce tablets and whatever. When we go to those factories where we bust, we find the machinery. Can it be controlled? Because it's equipment that we know that produces certain things. But it's those type of things to say, is there a regulatory space that can assist to ensure that we track who is buying what, where it is, what they're using it for? Because those machines you can literally take and give them to any of the pharmaceutical companies that will be able to use it. So it's those type of issues that where it's a little bit grey. And who imports what? As police, it's not our space, but we'll be able to say there are people who are having gadgets that give them, you know, extra space to listen to or to do other things. And those type of methods. On the procedure to pay for informants, Shepherd, let me say, when I look at what is happening in crime intelligence, this type of issues, we would want to think there is a COVID aspect of it, but perhaps we should retreat and ask, for instance, I'm just worried about how we use that type of information. For them, I think there's the COVID issues that we can deal with. I'm just thinking of the informants for the detectives, whatever, but they're still linked to some of the work that they're doing. I'm just not sure whether it is the right platform to deal with this matter. Can we be given time to just think it through and see whether we can be able, maybe in a controlled fashion, share that type of information, Jefferson?
No, I think let's consider that we're anyway meeting on Tuesday morning at 9, so 9:30, so we can then again address the matter.
Okay. On the issues of the IG again, Chapter 7, I'm not sure whether we are able to deal with. We can, I think it's issues that are sitting in the other committee, so I'm not sure whether we're in good space to talk about IG issues here without being found to be in contravention of another committee and other prescripts.
Right, is there other responses we still need information on? I haven't been answered on my question about the targets and the link. Because if the argument is of yesterday, of an integrated approach to
fight crime, and I also want to have the link with the work that the BCI is doing. What is the value chain again? I just want to get more meat on what the value chain, what is CI bringing to the table in terms of an integrated approach to ensure that we bring trio crimes down. What is the value bringing to the table? I can't get that.
I think General Zun can talk about how she's assisting CI and GPCI in this area so that Jefferson, you can be of some level of comfort, General Zun. Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the targets that the Chairperson is saying that is too low, if we look at our targets in each and every financial year, there is an increase of 5%, which is just standard. And in each and every year, we find that we've exceeded with a certain percentage out of that. In terms of the value chain, in terms of addressing the trio crimes, whatever is happening, whether are the detectives investigating the matters that are related to the trio crimes, we are there to provide them with the intelligence product. Being in our intelligence product, it can be for profiling the suspects that around involved in those particular trio crimes. It will be a link to also to the commission analysis report that we provide to the detectives who are dealing with those particular investigations. It can also be linked to to our crime threat assessment that we are conducting around the area to say these are the particular trio crimes that are happening around the area, the information can be utilized both by visible policing to come with a proactive policing of this particular crime and then also be utilized by the detectives or GPCI to deal with that crime. And in each and every project that is run by GPCI, there is an analyst that is coming from crime intelligence. There is a collection guy with a cop who is working on the undercover issues who is participating in whatever project that has been done by the GPCI. If you look at to the work of GPCI and the detectives, when crime committed, they are not there. And to find out who committed crime is a very difficult thing. So you will need another way to say, how are you going to get the information to say how the crime was committed, which now is done in another way, which we can be able to explain. I tried to explain also when we had our Joint Standing Committee of Intelligence, the working group, to say how do we do now in a COVID approach to deal with a particular, assistance to assist the detectives as well as the visible policing. So the value chain is always there. The detectives, we are deploying all the resources that crime intelligence is mandated legally to utilize to assist to deal with crime. And some of them, because of the nature of reporting, in the other reporting portfolio, we are able to disclose that we are able to utilize A, B, C, and D, but we are supporting them in all the way. I would say that in terms of the targets, always we are exceeding the targets. It's the only thing that I never calculated to say if there is an exit, we've exceeded the target with how many percentage, maybe because we can move from to say we've got standard 5% increase, we say almost we've got an extra of 2%, maybe let us move from 5% and we say 7% increase and we see maybe if we can exceed above that.
I think because, remember, after the crime stats was announced, a lot of these civil society institutions and analysts have said, well, you know, the reason why there is an increase is the capability of crime intelligence because of the issues. So I just want to know, I mean, there is an active approach to ensure that all elements is involved in fighting it. I just want to know, in terms of the integrity testing, you've got your own unit, or is the DPCR unit? I just want to get a sense of.
On the integrity unit, it's like HR, you'd have a function in national, but there would be sub-contact points in each of the areas. DPCI was ahead because they started with a unit. We will connect with it, but now we are having a national one, and we would have nodal points, contact points in the provinces, in the divisions, and everywhere, and all of it will fall into the national unit of Indian region.
Members, we go into the last round.
I think there was just one chance through you. There was the issue that was raised in terms of IA. Indeed, we take that advice. We do use our internal audit to assist us to audit a number of these areas to test the rigor of our interventions. Thank you.
Yeah, members, I just want to indicate we're going to the last round. Then we're going to program 5. And then we're going to have the briefing from a doctor regarding the vetting. Yeah, I just want to give the game plan. Yes, no, we'll take all hands, so please do not. Honorable Grubal, Honorable Kuala.
Chairperson, I don't have a follow-up, but I've asked on the JSCI report and the discrepancy is when it comes to the interceptions, and I didn't receive an answer on that.
Honorable Kuala.
Chair, I think this question that I'll be raising now has in a way been touched upon, but I would want the commissioner to give us a ventilated version. The experiences that derive from the operations, to what extent are they able to influence policy formulation? And if you have experiences with such processes, what would they be? Has there been a body of sorts or an instrument through which that has been facilitated? I'm saying this against the backdrop of perceived challenges that you may have in relation to closing gaps to enable efficiency within your service environment. Thanks.
Yeah, just maybe the last question from my side is the practical issue also during our visit to Mamelodi West. I just wanted to know the chain. If, for instance, a station, and I know that the intelligence function is usually at the cluster level, but if there is a need from a station to have the necessary resources to deal with issues, I just want to know that communication process, is there any way that is currently being improved? Is it being tested on a regular basis that you don't have a station where there is a detective team and they're struggling to get that necessary support to deal with local issues? I just want to get a sense of that. Is there active testing of that chain, that value chain at the station level? Because the interactions we had with some of the detectives, we get a mixed message. So I just want to know what are the game plan from a management perspective.
Dr. Zulu, can you start with the last question in terms of the need for how we give support at the local level, should a need be there in terms of detectives or whatever, and how do we connect cluster station connection, specific need in the station?
Thank you, General. Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the support of the detectives, if you look at the structure of intelligence, we've got intelligence which is the cluster intelligence, which is at the cluster level. That cluster intelligence station, it has got number of stations that is supporting. So if you are in the Mamelodi station, Mamelodi cluster has got a number of clusters that is supporting at the station level. So which means if the detectives, they find that, oh, there is a bank robbery around the area. So the cluster, CI cluster at that particular level is the one now who is going to support the detective in terms of when they are checking the suspects, providing the analysis that will be needed by the detectives. Sometimes we find that the capability in the cluster is not maybe at that level that they can go further. They will then now move it to the provincial because the clusters, they are reporting directly to the crime intelligence cluster, provinces. There where you now will be saying that now we want to deploy maybe certain particular instruments so that we can be able to deal with. Then the formal application will be done. So now the detective who's there at the station A is being supported now by a cluster as well as the province. Even if the province, they feel that the capability, maybe it needs a national intervention looking to that particular crime that has been committed, they will also ask the request from the national. So we are supporting them in all the ways. So sometimes even you read to say there was a case that, I mean, when you read our daily report, and then you find that maybe that particular station won't be able to, I mean, to deal with this particular crime, then as a divisional commissioner, I would be saying that, no, General Kalakala, you have to intervene in that one, support that particular station. So because we can see that the capability to deal with that particular crime, it will need an extra expertise, which some of them, they are lying at the provincial level or they are lying at the national level. But all the time, we are supporting them and we are making sure that whenever they request our assistance, we are there for them. And I hope I've answered the last question, Chairperson. It will answer the support that you provide to the cities.
Chairperson, on the issue that was raised through you, that was raised by Honorable Kunebal, because we have a thing that report board would assist us, maybe to request that we look at it and look at how best we respond to that which is public, and comparing it to the issues that you've raised, then we can submit a response in writing. We will respond to this. There was another question. Oh, I think Dr. Zulu wanted.
You know, General, although I will just give some information that can maybe be on the consumption on this particular site. When we talk about the reports, we are talking about the analysis that we have done, which was linked towards the interception. So when you do X70, there can be, in that X70, there can be a number of things that you can do. The application, but it was a fight, which is one, but having number of targets within it. So if you start now having subject A, B, C, and D, and then you analyze subject A, B, C, and D, it will increase your number of reports that you are going to produce. But when you go to the, to present to the judge is looking at the file that you are submitting. So I can submit 500 files, but the reports that I can go to generate there, out of 500 files, in each file, I can generate more than 100 reports, because it depends to say how many subjects are within the file, and then we are calculating the reports based on that. So there the judge will be reporting in terms to say, this is so many files that you presented to me. For us, we are reporting to say, so many reports that were generated in this particular file.
Thank you, Jefferson. This gives a totally different perspective on the issue. Can we then get the number of applications for communication interceptions from the police? Because if I understand it correctly, I can understand, maybe it's one application to the judge, but you have different reports from that that has been explained. But can we then get the figure or the number of applications to the judge for interception? Thank you.
Chairperson, I think that's the one that we say, let's look at responding to you, because we just need to make sure that we're not crossing boundaries. Because as you said, when I sign an interception, you may find that it's one file, but in there we're looking at 17 people. And this is why she says that report, when it comes, it will be given 17 people, with each one of them, one carrying one number, one carrying six numbers. So it actually does certain things in terms of the interception that you're dealing with. But let's come back to your person as we've requested in writing.
Okay. Right, any member with a final question before
there
we...
There was a question of Honorable Chwala. May I request that he again just restate his question English for the afternoon.
Thank you, Chair. What I was asking of the Commissioner was simply that in relation to your experiences, operational experiences, as police in your environment, you come across certain things, certain experiences, certain challenges. How are those utilized in policy formulation with a view to enhancing the quality of service that you also render to citizens?
Chairperson, I must say, we have a number of platforms that we use. You know, we use reports, we use personal engagements, we use peer sharing, we use our operational engagement forums such as your NMF, where we sit and discuss issues and deliberate. And when we are sitting there and issues placed on the table, you have the detectives, you have the DPCI, you have CI, you have TMS, you have finance. So we're able to look at issues from a multiple angle. Part of what we have also moved towards is to start saying there are certain significant issues that we must give, you know, subject matter leadership on. The very establishment of the research unit, the sub-research unit, is to assist us to do so, because there are certain lessons that are so profound and findings that are profound where we can give, you know, leadership not only to ourselves but also to the region in terms of areas where we have been able to break through preeminence, to learn from each other within subs, across police agencies, across departments, and just looking at the case, you know, the cluster system, it's also bringing in a lot in terms of how we do things. If you take an exercise such as the net joint, it has really taught us a lot as a government. But interdepartmental collaboration, peer exchange, use of differentiated capacities is able to take us very, very far in terms of how we deal with issues. So we'll be using those different platforms, you know, that we're having internally. We're looking at that research platform to assist us to do certain things. Just recently we were meeting, for instance, with various heads of departments in tertiary institutions to just sit and listen to the research that they have done around issues of policy, and we are looking at having a colloquium, you know, picking up certain research specialization issues and issues of prominence that have come out, because we believe through those experiences we can further enhance our capacity to deliver as policy. Thank you, Chair.
Last question, Chairperson. It's an old problem when it comes to intelligence. My question is there a good relationship, working relationship, between the police, MIA, besides NICOC, when it comes to certain cases? That is very important for me to know whether that is there, because normally you get a sort of a professional jealousy when it comes to those matters.
General? The advent of this interdepartmental collaboration has really taken us far in various areas. And as you're saying, besides NICO, that has been a foundation and a platform for really sowing the eyes amongst the various agencies. We are collaborating, and I think we can only expect to grow from there. I can say, for instance, right now, some of the discussions we're having is, should we have exchanges on some, or agreement on some basic training to say, any intelligent person, whether they're in the police, whether they're in defense, whether they're in here, what would we agree would be the basis of the basic training that they require? Those are the type of cooperation discussions
that we're having, looking into what they've done, that we can learn from them. And I think even, you know, growing the pond from which we can build a broader skills platform where we can employ from as agencies, because at the end of the day, whether you are in the police, whether you are in defense, whether you are in NIA, whether you're in some intelligence function, is that all of us are fighting towards one thing, to reduce crime in the country. So we can only leverage and make sure that we extend our capacity through cooperation.
Thank you for the presentation. I think what is important going forward is that we need to fast-track all those DC legal processes, if it's at all possible, to ensure that there is a permanent head appointed at the institution. I think we welcome the fact that the provincial heads are in place, because that will lead to stability, and also the fact that there is a focus on a, let's say, new generation operator with the necessary skills. That is very good. We welcome that. Very importantly, also an integrated approach, and I think that was also the dialogue yesterday coming from SAPS. We need an integrated approach, and I think CI has got a huge role to play. So we will watch next year in terms of the stats, is there impact in terms of dealing with those issues of organized crime, violent crime, queue crime. That must be the contribution coming from CI to ensure that we deal with it. And the important thing that we pick up from the ground is the linkages to stations and communities. If we go to stations, we need to have assurance that there is that linkage to the model that was indicated by the doctor. So I think that's critical, that in terms of systems, that linkages are there, the necessary support and also evaluation, that you don't have maybe detectives in a faraway part of the country sinking and not getting that necessary support. So that's what the committee wants to see going forward. Thank you very much. So we will go now to program 5. Over to SAPS.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Program 5, for all the protection functions, we will have Major General Quina representing both the PPS and the PSS. We shall deal with both the issues of protection as well as the government regulatory issue. In terms of the overall performance in this area, they had a total of 6 indicators. They achieved 5 out of those, and this is an area where we normally request that we achieve all, and as we present, we will also talk to how we are seeking to deal with some of the areas where we have not achieved. General Skete, if you can just touch on the money issues, and then I would request General Gwena to deal with the targets as well as the highlights. Thank you, General Skete.
Thank you, Chairperson. Protection Security Services, our 5th and basically our last program in terms of our appropriation. It consists of 4 sub-programs, the first being VIP Protection Services. VIP Protection Services expended 876 million. They went over to the extent of 13%, mainly for travel and subsistence, because I move a lot with all these VIPs. So they were over in this regard. Remember, there was also a scenario last year towards the end in the fourth quarter where you had an increase in terms of your preparation for elections and all of those things. But it was S&T, and then also machinery and equipment, the reasons being we increased the fleet, upgraded the fleet, and modernized the fleet, not just only for VIP VIPs themselves, but also for the protectors who are doing the cavalcades, as well as the protectors using that in order to drive themselves. That those were the two aspects that contributed towards the 13% over. It was S&T specifically, and we upgraded the fleet. I think it was in the vicinity of just in excess of 50 million in this regard. Then also the static and mobile security. That's actually only static security. They had a 96.5% under expenditure, mainly as a result of goods and services. Then government security regulator, they were very close, 99.3 in this regard. And then operational support, which is basically their staff functions to a large extent, which include also other support, but it includes also the staff functions. They were under, all in all, the program was a little bit over 102.7%, mainly as a result of a deliberate upgrade of the vehicle fleet and modernization to sustain that kind of vehicle fleet, and then also as a result of the S&T, because your sub-program one is a significant program of in the vicinity of 700 million. We then say the spending, including VIP protection services, provides for the protection while in transit of the president, temporary presidents, former presidents, their spouses, and other identified VIPs. And then secondly, the static protection, the second sub-program, provides for the protection of sites and residences of identified VIPs. Other projects financed by SAPS, such as there were a few events as well, BRICS, official funeral in the Eastern Cape, that also contributed to a certain expenditure in this regard. Thank you, James.
Thanks, National Commissioner. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, I will immediately move to the sub-program VIP protection. When you look at the target that we had for the financial year 2013, we said we are going to provide 100% protection without any security breach. And indeed, in the financial year that has just passed, the target was achieved. Also, when you look at the presidential protection services, we also indicated the target should be 100% without any security breach, and the target was achieved. The highlights that are major to us is that the presidential protection service is in the process of building capacity in terms of K9 capacity, national key points, and others, so that they can work independently in terms of their focus area. Then we move to the sub-program, static security. In the static security, also the indication was that the target should be 100% for the past financial year. But there were 6 breaches, meaning that out of the 97,090 VIP operations in the static environment that we provided, there were only 6 breaches, and we managed to work 97,084 protection operations without any security breach. Percentage-wise, is 0.006% in terms of the breach. In the protection environment, the presidential protection environment, also in the static environment, we said there should be 100% protection without any security breach, which was achieved in the financial year. The major highlights for the static environment is that 97,090 static protection operations were conducted to protect 42 installations and government buildings and 90 VIP residences with only 6 security breaches, the 0.006%. Another highlight is that we had 2 opening of parliaments, one in Pretoria, the other one in Cape Town, as well as a presidential inauguration. In terms of security, there were no incidents, all were incident-free.
The next sub-program is the government security regulator. In the government security regulator, we indicated that the target for 2013-2014 is that 50% of the strategic installations should be audited. We've got about 124 that we said it's our target from the 248. We exceeded the target by 127 that we audited. I will explain why now the 50% of all that we have. In most instances per financial year, out of the 248, we only do have where we audit strategic installations at government institutions. We go, we look, we check whether the safety of the place, the burglar proofs, the access to the place is in order, then we come up with recommendations. But now, we give 50% only a chance for them to implement that, because in most instances, it takes time for government departments to implement the recommendations that they come up with. That is why the 50%. When you go to the national key points, when the year started, we said we are going to evaluate 100% of the national key points, which were 197. But when you look at the actual achievements, it's 199, which is a bit skewed. That I will explain also. The reason is because national key points are not static. They are new ones that are being registered, there are others that are being deregistered. Now, in this instance, we've got additional new two national key points that were registered. Hence, we audited 199 instead of 197. As we speak, they might not be 199. Either they might be more or less. So they are non-dynamic national key points. In terms of the major highlights, three government sector security council meetings were held, 87 physical security assessments and 31 reassessments were conducted at VIP residents, parastatals, government departments, and other relevant structures. And that is it from Program 5. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much for that presentation. We will give opportunity for questions, two from my side. The one is to deal with VI protection. It's a very high-pressured environment. I just wanted to know, again, in the question of wellness, I think we referred to that a few months ago in terms of the general SAPS approach, but I just wanted to know, in terms of wellness, is there sufficient support given to members? We have seen reports of foreign jurisdictions where people get a high wire sometimes in those environments. In the case of SAPS, we've got a very good record. We must keep it up. So I just want to know, is there sufficient support in terms of people are long away from their families? I just want to get a sense, are we doing enough from that perspective? And then the second question deals with the question of the government security regulator, just to get an indication. Although the Secretariat is supposed to do the review of the Act, where are we? What is the input from the side of SAPS that we move with that process? Honourable Kota Barnard, Honourable Groenewald, Honourable Mordovatsian.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. A success rate of 75%. Six security breaches. What were these breaches? Who could have died? Because your job is a zero-sum game. You actually can't make mistakes. If we have a foreign dignitary here and you are tasked with protecting them, and you have an issue, one of the six, and we have a foreign dignitary murdered on our soil, it could be a massive problem. So please fill us in what these breaches were, how serious were they, who was fired as a result, was anyone arrested as a result, did it reflect corruption within the division or not? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've covered by your question here, but I want then to ask the sign language person with the funeral of Madiba, was that seen as a security breach or not? Secondly, you've got two new national key points registered. Is Nkandla one of them? Thank you.
I think Honourable Molabasi next.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I'm partly covered by
Honorable Kolabangas, but my second question is on the... What is the reason for the... Let me rephrase my question. Can we have an explanation on the removal of the indicator of the percentage of advisory reports compiled? Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Kuala, you indicate. I
agree with you. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm on the six breaches. I want to find out what is the plan. You did not tell us. What is the plan to prevent this in occurring in the future? Because you must have a plan so that it doesn't occur in the future. Prevent it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will get the responses from SEPS.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Firstly, starting with the issue of the six security breaches, to respond to the two questions. The VIP environment is got both static as well as in transit on VIP, those who guard bodyguards. Now, that one was 100%. The one where there were breaches, it's static. Now, static is where they are guarding like parliament, they are guarding houses, and when there is a breach there, that is what we refer to as a breach, when there's a security breach. Now, there are internal processes that we are undertaking insofar as the members are concerned. In some instances, the perpetrators of the very same breaches, that is members of the community from outside, are being arrested. There's a Mr. Low in the Northern Cape who's been sentenced to 3 years for the very same security breach. The six breaches, the question where they are, two were in Northern Cape. One was in Bloemfontein, in Free State. One was here in Western Cape, and two were in Gauteng.
General, can you just want to repeat the numbers for the honourable member of the breaches?
It's six breaches, security breaches, in the static environment. Two were in the Northern Cape, where there was a Mr. Low arrested and sentenced for 3 years. There was one in the Free State, the case is still pending. There was one in the Western Cape in the provincial government, where a laptop was stolen on the sixth floor. Mr. Pretorius, who is an employee, who is a cleaner in the provincial government, was arrested, and the case is still pending. And then there were two in Gauteng. The one that is where 8 members attacked the house of the Rwandan general who was seeking political asylum here in South Africa. That we regard as a breach also. But where there is negligence, insofar as the members are concerned, there are internal processes that are being implemented to ensure that that doesn't happen again. There is the question from the Honourable Chair about support. We do provide support to the members. As I've indicated previously, not be now, that these members, they know what to expect insofar as the rigorousness of their post. The thing is, they attend two courses for them to be protectors. There's the basic VIP course, and there is an advanced VIP course. Continuously, we rotate these members. It's not every time that all the time there will be members who are doing one and the same thing. And there are times when the VIPs are leaving the country, giving the member enough time for training, for rest, as well as for other deployments in other areas. So we've got EHW within the system also, where there are personal issues that are being attended to, insofar as these members are concerned. So there is support that we are providing. But towards the election, as we know, that all the VIPs are going around, it might be a bit hectic for those few months. In terms of review of the National Key Point Act by the Secretariat, SAPS is also inputting on the Act.
There is a team that is partaking in ensuring that we put in our recommendations, our suggestions, our advice in so far as the Act is concerned. So we are playing a role in so far as that is concerned. The strategic infrastructure bill. No, Uganda is not one of the new national key points. And the question about adversary reports, that I didn't get well, it being removed from the key performance areas.
Chairperson, I want to make sure. Is Nkandla a national key point in terms of the police services, yes or no?
Honourable Bailey?
Thanks, Chair. Two questions. The first is just the explanation or the rationale for why the Presidential Protection Services require independent capacity in terms of K-9 and national key points, as was mentioned. And then possibly related to Honourable Punavo's question is what were the two national key points that were added that reflected that 197 to 199 counts? Thank you.
And then I've got just a question regarding the static security members at, for instance, the legislatures and so on. Is there, in terms of career pathing, also an effort, you know, some members will be at these various institutions for many years, and then you know them. The question is in terms of career pathing for those members, in terms of rotation. I just want to get a sense of, are we doing new things about that to ensure that we also capacitate members and give them new opportunities?
Chairperson, let me just deal with those ones, and General Gwena will add to this. In terms of career pathing, one area that we're looking into, we're lumping there, particularly on the staging front, because we're starting to say a member may be an expert and experience in terms of that. We need to look at their growth. That's number one. And it is one of the issues that are sitting in the basket of human resources to look at how we deal with career pathing in that area. Coupled with that, we're looking at rotation issues so that we can be able to rotate members to get a fuller, extended experience within the policing environment. We take, for instance, areas such as, border management. There are outlying borders where you would know, I mean, if you take the border between Northern Cape and Namibia, there's one at the corner that's very isolated, and putting any member there for a lifetime would not be helpful. So we're looking at rotation type schemes that can come into there and ensuring that we start developing rounded police officers that can fit in multiple areas. It's been there, but in and out of fashion, but we want to structure it for areas such as this one, and we've started identifying those and putting those in a basket, and HR is looking at a number of those. The other thing that we'll be looking at is to starting to look at the complexity of the static environments that they're responsible for. We can start to looking at the senior, experienced people to do other functions as opposed to others. So work is being done in that area. The issue of K-9, and I'm sure General Gwena will also add into that. There's a lot of benchmarking that we're doing in terms of presidential protection services to start looking at those units that are elsewhere in other countries, how you have that type of work being done, because you know, the K-9 function in that space is a given. It's got to be there. We sweep regularly various environments where these executives are visiting. So we need to look at those to ensure that you have almost self-contained, readily accessible, readily available type support in terms of those functions.
but we're benchmarking quite a lot. We're studying what others are doing because all we want to achieve is preeminence as a South African police service in offering those services. But General Gwena can add on to those and deal with the other last question. I think there's one question. If you want to add to those and then deal with whatever is remaining as part of questions.
Thanks very much, Jefferson. I think in most instances, the National Commission has touched base on all these questions. I'll just add on the issue related to the K-9 capacity, as indicated in the presentation. In most instances, we might not be having dogs in other areas, and we rely on dogs from provinces where the VIP is going to visit. Now, usually, the provinces train dogs in dual forms. You'll find that there's a patrol dog. Also, the very same patrol dog is an explosive dog. Now, we've seen that we should focus on developing our own canine capacity because our dog should mainly do explosive search. Because when we take a patrol dog, take him again back to, sometimes it causes a bit of a confusion. Hence, an attempt to try to purify this area to ensure that we build capacity in all the provinces insofar as canine is concerned within the presidential visits. When it comes to the issue again related to static, I've indicated there's a time frame that the members will be working at the gate and because they've got basic VIP. But the idea, as the National Commissioner indicated, after they've got the advanced VIP, we attach them now to a VIP, we rotate them with others so that they can go and work with VIPs and not only remain in one environment forever. That is the general idea. Thank you.
I will repeat the question, Jefferson. I ask a very simple question. Is Nkanta a national key point, yes or no?
Honourable Bele? Sorry, Chair. My question was also unanswered, which was what were the two national key points added to make the count go from 197 to 199? And if I make a very quick quick follow-up on the response I received on the formation of the independent capacity within the Presidential Protection Unit, I suppose it's an inverse of the question, which is why would the development of these capacities in the provinces where there are gaps, for example, not be the answer as opposed to creating it within the presidential units? Because where I'm coming from with that question is I'm worried about concerned about the apparent creation of a very cushy, very exclusive ring of resources and capacity around the presidents, which might not speak to the other systemic issues that also need to be looked at and addressed.
Thank you. Just two quick ones from my side. Is there any other member before we break for tea? The one issue relates to the question of security in terms of vetting. I just want to know, is there constant re-vetting of the VIP protectors and assurance in terms of that? That is the first issue. And then the question of retention. The head of detective services indicated yesterday that, because of the expertise, they are easily, especially experienced detectives, are easily poached by other institutions. To train a VIP protector, I presume, is a cost, it's a costly exercise. I just want to know, what is your retention approach? What is your what is the percentage of attrition during the year? And we've got specific retention strategies to ensure that we get value for money. I just want to get a response on that.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Firstly, all the houses belonging to the President and Deputy Presidents are seen as national key points. Yes. Mm-hmm. comes to the vetting of VIPs, I think when the National Commissioner presented indicating that there are certain areas that are going to be a focus area insofar as vetting is concerned. For example, she mentioned supply chain management, where they do procurement. The VIP environment is also one of them, because they deal with the VIP sometimes with sensitive issues. So it's also a focus area in terms of vetting. In terms of retention of members, this is the response that the National Commission has already alluded to earlier on, to indicate that to make members stay within a particular environment, we are trying to rotate them so that they should grow in their environment. And in this way, the members prefer in most instances even to stay at the VIP environment rather than any other environment. The only thing is the members who are doing static duties. That is why now where retention is coming, that is where now we are capacitating these members to ensure that they also rotate together with members who are posted in VIP so that they should remain within the unit itself. The issue of the 197, now being 199, Honorable Chair, we are talking about the national sequence. I will request that it be included in a written response that the National Commissioner has indicated that certain matters will be responded to accordingly.
My members, thank you very much. We come into the end of Program 5. Thank you very much for the presentation to the SAPS team. Of course, we will do the betting one after tea. I think it's important that Program 5 continue with, you know, the achieving of the targets. That is very good. And, of course, it's quite important that the finalization of the review of the NKPA Act is a priority, and the board should be given the necessary speed. And then, of course, quite important to ensure that we look after the wellness of our members. That is critical, and the Portfolio Committee will, of course, support any effort to make sure that they can do their job. They do a critical job.
So, let's break for about...